sorry. I am going to have to leave early today. So, but I'll just disconnect.
Okay. Who is that?
Carol.
Okay. So I'll ask again. Are there any announcements?
Yeah. This is Mark McCaffrey, and I am now out in Oakland with the National Center for Science Education. And we are about to launch next week on Monday our new climate change education initiative. So I'll be sending out kind of an invitation for all of you to take a look at the site and give us feedback. Our main focus historically has been defending the teaching of evolution in schools, and we are now really focusing on that as well as defending the teaching of climate change in schools. So, you know, I think there's potentially a lot of overlap and things that we can do that are very complementary to the Climate Literacy Network and a lot of the projects that all of you are involved with. So stay tuned for that and look forward to, you know, continuing to be involved with the climate education community.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Is congratulations, Mark, on surviving the move and all.
Yeah, it's been epic.
The mountain.
Mark asked me a while back about the NAAEE conference in Oakland that's coming up in October. And as I understand it, by the end of January, the call for proposals will be out, and I'll forward that to everybody. This is Karen Holwig.
For those that are somewhat new to our call, the past 2 years, the Climate Literacy Network has put together a set of coordinated session proposals and presentations at the NAAW meeting, which actually brings me to my next announcement. Is last week it was suggested, Don was on the call. I don't know, Don, are you there? Don Dugenhaus reminded us that the GSA session proposals are due today, and so we did put together two session proposals that are on the verge of being submitted. They are separated into, one is addressing climate change education activities in informal context, formal context at both K-12 and undergraduate and public outreach. And then the other session is focused on education research and evaluation around knowing effective methods of conveying these kinds of messages. So those are going to be the two sessions, and we are really close to getting them submitted, but they're due to. So that will happen relatively soon. Are there any other announcements? Okay, well, if not, we will move on to our presentation today. I'm assuming everybody has gotten the slides from the website. We have Dr. Stephanie Fuhrman, the Hirschhorn Professor and co-chair of the Environmental Science Department at Barnard College and Columbia University. And she is the principal investigator of the Polar Learning and Responding, the Polar Climate Partnership. And so she's going to talk to us a bit about what those activities are and lead a discussion about it. So, Stephanie, we'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks. Can everybody hear me? I have it on speaker, but I could take it off if it doesn't work.
I can hear you fine.
You can hear me fine? Okay, good. So, as Tamara said, this is I'll be talking about the Polar Learning and Responding Polar Climate Partnership, and this is funded by NSF under the Climate Change Education Partnership Phase 1. So we're roughly 18 months or so, a little bit less, 15 months into this project, and the vision. So just jumping right into the first slide. So the vision of our group is to use people's fascination with the changing polar regions and coupling that with novel educational approaches to engage adult learners and inform public discussion in response to climate change. So we're not limiting our scope to just changes in the polar regions. We're talking both about learning about the changes there, but then also talking about how people can respond to climate change. And if we go to the next slide, so I'm sorry, I don't have slide numbers. I just noticed that. But this one is titled Our Partnership. We are teamed up with a really neat group of people. It was really exciting putting this group together. We have climate researchers from Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia, as well as the Columbia Climate Center, which is basically downtown in New York City, and it's got a lot of an interdisciplinary scope beyond the earth science perspectives of Lamont Doherty. And then I'm based primarily at Barnard College, but I have a joint appointment at Columbia as well. And I'm the PI on this grant. We also have Larry Hamilton from the University of New Hampshire, Mary Beth Murray from the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, Elena Sparrow at the International Arctic Research Center. And these are all people who, when you think about, you know, climate change and the polar regions, you know, immediately come to mind. These are the PIs and the partners that I've mentioned. We also have a large number of people at Lamont and the American Museum of Natural History and other places that are contributing as well. For example, Robin Bell is one of our part of our polar team, and she adds a really strong Antarctic perspective. Our learning and decision experts are from Teachers College, and it's really great because they have people there with expertise on games. So people who study, Second Life and who study Facebook and things like that, that's what their research areas are, and they have also developed games and animations and simulations themselves, and they have graduate students who are working with them on doing exactly that. We have this Columbia Center for Research on Environmental Decisions, and I noticed in the talk that was on, I think it was like December 9th or something like that, from the Aquaria, they were using a product from CRED, which is the Psychology of Climate Change Communication, that's been really well received by the community, and we use that also in our partnership. And then the International Arctic Research Center also has contributes learning and decision expertise as well. Then our formal education practitioners are at the Columbia Center for New Media Teaching and Learning. Their basic job is to connect faculty members with students in innovative ways. We have people, all of us who are teaching classes have expertise in that area. And then informal education practitioners, we have the American Museum of Natural History, which has been a really strong partner for us in multiple ways, as I'll talk about in just a second. So does anybody have any questions about the partnership? I won't stop with every slide, but with just one comment about this is we've been really excited as we've been holding our community workshops and having brainstorming different projects with the capacity. You know, the NSF, the solicitation said that we had to put people together in each of these areas, and it was, although many of us had worked with people with some of these people before or knew of each other, this is the first time that this group was coming together in this way, and it's been really neat for us to learn from each other. So we're focusing on the poles, and the reason for this, there's multiple reasons for this, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, something like the graph that is shown there. When people think about global warming, they immediately think about melting ice and polar bears and to some extent sea level rise and things like that. So it really, it is one of the sort of iconic images that comes to mind. And the poles are changing. They're ground zero for climate change. The fastest changes are occurring in the Arctic and the Antarctic Peninsula. The changes at the polar regions extend globally. They have impact through sea level rise, you know, changes in albedo, the potential, the release of greenhouse gases from thawing permafrost, and increasingly now there's been discussion about sort of the warm Arctic cold continent where the Arctic strikes back. If you destabilize the Arctic by making it too warm in winter, then you can destabilize the atmosphere, which results in pulses of, you know, extreme cold and weather that's affecting the mid-latitudes. So there's the poles are not, you know, the changes that are happening at the poles are not isolated to the poles, but the rest of the world as well. And the public not only identifies warming with these changes, but also is fascinated and concerned about life in extreme polar environments. And so they have this sense. Was it Jim Anderson who spoke a couple weeks ago? I listened to the audio, and he was talking about stewardship, and this is something that really comes to play with the public is both concerned and fascinated with the changes that these polar regions are experiencing. So the next slide is the focus on adult learners. We decided to focus on adult learners because our impression was that there was a lot of material available for K through 12. And as you'll see when we do our inventory in a couple of slides, I'll report back on that. And that really is the case. And our discussions with stakeholders as well. People are really looking for sort of high quality and engaging material that can reach adults in different ways. And our definition of adults ranges from college students to pre- and in-service teachers. So we do have reach into, you know, the middle and high schools through providing teacher resources. And then lifelong learners in the general public. And these can be people who are just interested. So we have a project that's focusing on seniors through kind of an elder hostel-like setting, but also managers in professional capacities as well. So the populations, you know, include educators and citizens, managers, you know, youth and remote communities. And what we said in the proposal was that, you know, these people are faced with making decisions right now, and they need to have this understanding and awareness about what's happening in the polar regions and then also what they can do about it. And while it's important to address the K-12 because they're the ones who are going to be the leaders in the future, you know, if we need to be addressing the people who are actually, you know, in the kind of helping people retread a little bit or come up to speed who are you know, making the decisions now. So we've been engaging stakeholders representing, you know, non-governmental organizations because they've been trying to do this for quite some time. You know, people in business, community leaders, resource managers and other decision makers to try to identify and then meet their needs. So the third, we have these three elements, you know, the polar regions, adults, and then the third one, so we'll go to the next slide, is a focus on game-like approaches. So games and game-like approaches. We actually, in the conference, there was a conference call that was set up right after we were funded initially. I had said we had written in the proposal that we wanted to do things that were fun, and on the call they were asking me to define what is fun, so it was kind of interesting. But anyway, so the idea is that if we focus on game-like approaches, you know, interactive animations, visualizations, you know, social networking, some of these things that just engage people, we can get beyond the sort of 10-second soundbite. There was a tri-agency meeting in about a year ago, a little bit less than a year ago, where everybody was saying, you have to condense your message, you have to condense it, you know, you have to find really quick and easy ways to get your information across. And we're taking a different tack, which is we want to engage people so that they want to get into depth and they want to learn more. So through games, and research shows this, that you can get people involved in quite complex problem solving and quite complex material if they find it to be fun, you know, if they find it something that is challenging and they find it basically to be something that they want to spend their time on. So the games and game-like approaches allow for independent discovery rather than one-way communication because they are interactive. They reach different people in different ways. A lot of people were concerned about, and I know you've talked about this as well within this group, you know, people's eyes are just glazing over with climate change often, or they've got set opinions. So we're trying to kind of come in at with a different approach. They motivate people to pay attention, and they help people sort through really, you know, quite complex sets of information, and then they can make decisions and see alternate impacts. And this is something that our stakeholders said was really important. And then, of course, you know, depending on the format, but many of these are easily disseminated and used in both formal and informal settings at a variety of levels. So does anybody have any questions about the three aspects of our approach, the polls, the adult learners, and the game-like activities?
This is Tamara. Yep. You might be getting to this, but are your game-like approaches both online, interactive, as well as hands-on,
yeah,
like the cards you show here in the picture?
So exactly. You have a spectrum. Yep, I'll be getting to that. That's a great question, and that's exactly what we're spanning a spectrum.
Okay, great.
So we did an inventory. This was part of the requirement of the of the original solicitation, and it was what we found was that the vast majority of materials that were out there that we could identify through a web search basically, but we were looking for things other like card games too and board games, not just things that were served on the internet. But the vast majority of the material is focused for professional development for high school teachers. There's a lot more Arctic than Antarctic resources available. This was interesting. The top three topics that were addressed in the inventory that we found so far were sea ice, marine ecosystems, and then glaciers. A variety of materials exist, but that were created during the International Polar Year. This was, for those of you who aren't aware of this, this was this big... it spanned 2007 to 2009, and Mark was quite involved in it. It was a big initiative to both conduct research, but then also education and outreach about the polar regions. And so a lot of dedicated funding went into creating materials, and so that, because that was during the sort of digital age, there's a lot of that material available. For the adult audiences, then with a non-academic focus, the resources tend to either be animations and visualizations like NASA's Tour of the Cryosphere, or institutional websites. Institutional websites like Woods Hole Polar Discovery or other websites that with some collected information. What's not well represented in the inventory are polar games, these kind of engaging simulations involving interaction and manipulation and problem-solving collaborative pieces. And these were the ones that we were particularly interested in developing. And our needs assessment basically showed that we did not find a lot of those types of materials. And so we would be coming in, with a substantive resources. So
what are polar games?
Go ahead. Yep.
What are polar games?
Okay. So I'll be giving you some examples of them, but they are educational games that are focused on the polar regions. So so let me just think of something. Well, have you heard of World Without Oil? It was an alternate reality game that was a sort of crowdsourcing game that was posted a couple years ago before the big oil shocks high gas prices that said, what if gasoline cost $5 a gallon? And then, of course, like a year later, we got up to $4 a gallon or so. But that engaged people around the world actually in problem solving about how would they deal with that as a crisis. So that's kind of a social networking type game that that's focusing on oil. And there aren't a lot of things like that, or even adult oriented board games or card games that are relating to polar environmental changes.
Thanks.
Yep. Okay. So. So this was the background for this. And then if you go to the next slide, in terms of what we were going to develop and how we were going to adapt existing resources, we went to sort of the theoretical foundation of that CRED had established through their Psychology of Climate Change Communication. So that's this next slide. So they basically said you have to know your audience. You have to know that it's quite polarized. You have to find ways to get your audience's attention. You have to, and these, again, are exactly what we're trying to do by motivating people through fun and community and some other ideas, which I'll give you examples of in just a second. They said translate scientific data into concrete experience. So we all know that, like when we run labs for our students or whatever, but this is, find ways to get the adults, the general public, involved in working with scientific data in various forms. Beware the overuse of emotional appeals. They work well in terms of catching people's attention, but they don't tend to lead towards action or changing people's mindsets. That you often again, polarize people even more with those. Address scientific and climate uncertainties. So if you gloss over them, you're just not going to get any traction. You can find if, of course, you don't want to put caveats on everything, but when you can get people involved in understanding that there are uncertainties because of uncertainties and inputs. So, you know, we don't know what the climate of the future is going to be like. There's very different emission scenarios based on how people are acting. And impacts and adaptation can also, you can lead people through kind of some exciting ways to consider those. Another one is tapping into social identities and affiliations. Their research was just extraordinary in this area, where they said, if you just have people sitting around a table and they have like a piece of paper with instructions on it, and all the paper looks the same, you know, you don't really have so much of a group identity. If say you have four people and you give two people red dots on the corner of their pages and two people blue dots, but you don't tell them anything, but they're in a position to notice it, the red dot people start acting as a group, and the blue dot people start acting as a group. So just these really small things about putting people into teams makes for incredible affiliations and creating these really strong bonds. It's just extraordinary. It's kind of scary in a way, but it really is something that they said that can be tapped into when you're talking about climate change, and I'll give you an example of that. Encourage group participation. One of the strongest things is, you know, and you see this on TV ads, is, you know, people, supposedly your neighbor, saying, I'm going to use this product or something. So if you can get people who are your peers to and your community together, then you create this sort of lifelong, almost, and once people get to know each other, I mean, they can interact for the rest of their lives, and you can create these really strong circles of, what am I trying to say, support circles in a way. And then their final one was making behavior change easier. And this one, unfortunately, we haven't come up. I've been pushing people to see if we can come up with some concept, some game-like activity with this. But one of the things that CRED is really advocating is the use of defaults. So, like, if when you you get hired someplace, you're automatically signed up for retirement savings contribution, but you have to opt out of it if you don't want it, then a lot more people would contribute to retirement. The example that's frequently used is organ donation. So in Europe, you're automatically signed up for organ donation. You can opt out of it if you want, but you have to take the step to do that. In the U.S., it's the other way around. And so in the U.S., I don't know what the numbers are, something like 15 or 20% of people donate organs. And in Europe, it's exactly flipped. It's the other way around. Hardly anybody opts out. And so, you know, they don't have the problem with organ donation that we have here. And so we're trying to think of some way that we can work in defaults into some sort of game-like setting, but we haven't found one relating to climate that actually works. So I'll pause here and see if anybody has any questions about any of these.
The one comment I would make on this behavior change and making it easier, it's kind of a marketing ploy, too. And the way it's used when people email you or when you purchase something on the Internet, they have a box that's checked that says, I would like to receive catalogs or know about deals in the future. And you have to uncheck it if you don't want it. And so I think people end up participating somewhat in those kind of things because of this type of behavior change thing. I'm not sure how that applies in the work that you're developing, but I think that's the kind of strategy that we're looking at.
Exactly. I mean, that's a perfect example, too. And so sometimes...
I have a question.
Go ahead. Yep.
I'm just wondering if you have anybody who is actually developing the kinds of games that you're interested in that would actually be using all of these different things in a climate.
Yeah, so that, I'm laying this as a framework to show you that we've developed six. Most, you know, three of them are sort of, as they should be, are adaptations of existing ones, and actually almost all of them are adaptations of some existing game that we're sort of pushing into a polar climate direction. And we're using both these eight tenets or principles and then also the stakeholder input that I'll show you on the next slide as the foundation for those. Okay? So just to go back, though, so since I've learned this about the defaults, it always surprises me where I see, you know, check this box if you want to get the material rather than check this box to or uncheck this box, because it's such a strong thing that people, you know, just don't tend to notice it or don't take the time to sort of uncheck the box. So it's incredibly strong, and it really shifts people's behavior. And some people say it's manipulation. Right now it's manipulation in the other direction. So I think that this is something that we haven't, as a community, we haven't really, you know, developed as much as we could, setting the stage with some principles at the beginning that have defaults that kind of lead people in positive directions. So if any of you has ideas for sort of game-like animations or simulations or something, we can talk about this at the end, because that would be really great.
Hi, this is Martha from Earth Advertising, and I went through your slides and I noticed there wasn't a contact information at the end, so are you going to give that to us?
Oh, sure. I thought, yeah, I didn't realize I didn't have it, so yes, I can do that. Yep. Okay, so the next slide is stakeholder input. And we've talked with a wide range of people, you know, as I said, ranging from, you know, the New York City park rangers to World Wildlife Fund and Union of Concerned Scientists, you know, a lot of people who are on people at Deutsche Bank and Pfizer and people who are sort of on the front lines in a variety of different capacities trying to either make decisions or trying to help educate people about climate, especially adult audiences. And also, we've also talked with elders in Alaska and decision makers there as well. So, and these are just, you know, they're not in any particular order, but some of the things that came out of those discussions. So first of all, if you make the issues local and personal, it makes them more meaningful. So, you know, bringing things back to home. And, you know, this is not any surprise to any of you. This one I thought was really important for us, and it's interesting in terms of us positioning us for phase two, since the request for proposals just came out, the solicitation just came out. But we can take that up at the end. But this is sustainable development. You know, everyone we talked with said it's really hard in the United States to have people respond to climate change per se, or even to some extent to engage them through the perspective of climate change. Other things get them more excited. So things with sustainable development or related to health or legacy, you know, stewardship, jobs, that tends to get more traction. So again, this idea of coming at it from a different direction. Stories are invaluable, and we've built that into some of our games. It really helps, especially with intergenerational engagement. And this second aspect of that is person-to-person communication is important, and our research shows that even if the guide is an avatar, not a real person, having somebody who's kind of acting like a guide is really critical. When we talk about the trends, predictions, and polar global relationships, a systems framework people resonate with, you know, everything is connected to everything else. This is sort of this deeply held perspective, and it's something that we can tap into. When we asked people what they were looking for in terms of resources, they said that they also said beyond what our inventory results were that we figured out on our own, they said, look, there's just not enough material out there for adults. They want material on trade-offs. You know, if you do this, then this is the consequence. So the consequence of no action is this, but the consequence of acting in this way is this, and also trade-offs in terms of environmental impacts as well, that this might be, they want to see where there's positives as well as where there's negatives. They want to see how personal and community actions can make a difference. The next one was really interested interesting, which is the consequences of being reactive versus proactive. So this was something that people had said, that, you know, people can sit back and respond to climate change or, you know, the flooding or something like this, and saying, well, then this is what you do when you have this kind of crisis. But they were very interested in materials and information that could help people build resilience. So you would think in advance, if we set this up in a different way, then how can we position ourselves better? Was there a question? Somebody seemed to be trying to come in. Okay. They were also looking for ways to engage communities as problem solvers. I don't know if any of you have read this book, you know, Reality is Broken by Jane McGonigal. It's great. It's really, it's a fun read, and it's really well done. And she talks about the incredible capacity of people to get together and solve problems, you know, basically kind of crowdsourcing types of ideas. And this is what people in the community were saying as well. And then they wanted a variety of approaches. You know, it's not like card games are not going to solve everything, and not everybody plays card games. So they wanted a variety of different ways to reach different audiences in different contexts. Any questions about this? Okay. So I'll go on and I'll talk about a couple of the things that we're working on. So I'll take the ones first that are the closest to existing ones, and then talk about some of the other ones. So the iPad Polar Explorer. So this is really neat. There's something called the Earth Observer that was developed by some people here at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, and it allows you to basically, it's an app that allows you to explore the large data sets. And you know, you can explore temperature, bathymetry, or whatever. And so what we're doing is we're gathering together a whole bunch of different polar data that already exists, you know, on the Earth Observer databases, but then also bringing in some other data like social science data as well, and allowing people and creating guided tours, basically, of the cryospheric data. And the idea with this one is to link it in with news. So when something comes up, like in the New York Times, or like today, there was something in the New York Times about the ice, sea ice at Nome. So you could actually have people, you know, you could link to the database that would show what the sea ice extent is like at Nome and what it was like in previous years and da 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 da. So it kind of helps you access, you know, these massive, incredibly, you know, rich data sets, but in a guided way that's linked to news. And this is not going to appeal to everyone, but there's a lot of people out there who are kind of news junkies, and they are really interested in getting access to more data. And this definitely would work within a formal educational setting as well. Another one, the American Museum of Natural History, they have online teacher education courses. These are for in-service teachers, and they run. They are credit bearing. They cost. The teachers have to sign up for them, and they have to pay for them. And they have one on climate change. And so we infused polar content into it, and some games into it as well. And we're now doing a survey of the teachers, and the teachers developed educational resources, basically middle and high school polar resources that are going to be accessible to the general public. And so I'm sure, you know, these are ones that Clean would probably be interested in linking to also. And this was interesting to talk with the teachers to find out, you know, what keeps them, you know, what are the issues that they're facing, and then what keeps them, you know, what would encourage, how do they experience using games in their classrooms as well. Another one was gamification. So in the top right? This is a neat one. There's something called Mind Bloom that where you can actually establish goals, personal goals. Like, say you want to develop your professional network or something like that. Then it would give you some advice. It would say, okay, have lunch each week with a different person to try to expand the group of people that you're working with or something. So you would set that as a goal. It would calendar it for you. So it would show up every week as a task on your calendar. And then you, if you do not check saying that you've done this, then your professional development leaf turns brown and withers. If you're doing it every week, then it turns green and it gets bigger. So it's a way of both encouraging you and also tracking what you're doing. So we've got a really cool sort of knockoff of this one that is connected. We've got polar bears on melting ice, and we've got a whole bunch of using the best of Facebook and all these kinds of things. We've got this sort of interface that allows you to do some really fun activities and do them in a social context, which goes back to the CRED, one of the CRED tenets. The other one, so Future Coast, this is a sort of a knockoff of World Without Oil. We have the lead developer of World Without Oil who's working with us on this, and it's basically setting up a massive game that we plan to run if we get the funding in 2013 that would have people all around the world considering future climate change and sea level rise as if they were talking from the future. And it's very cool. He's done a number of these different kinds of games, and he's really excited about this one. Everyone he talks with says, yeah, this would be it'd be so neat to have a worldwide people tracking where sea level rise would be and people worldwide talking about how climate could be different in 2100. So this gets to the neighbor-to-neighbor because communities could actually get together, like, you know, the Elks Club could be out there with the Chamber of Commerce and things like that. But it also is talking about stories, and it's intergenerational, and so it really is kind of cool. At the bottom right, we've got Arctic Smartic. This started out as just a game to run in a classroom, but it's using marine spatial planning, which is just become all the rage. All the NGOs are really excited about this. It's getting people together around a table and basically plotting their interests and then negotiating areas of potential conflict. It seems sort of simple and straightforward, but it gets people really, it's amazingly effective. And both, you know, so it's worked so well with in the classrooms that we're talking with decision makers, with resource managers right now, and then also wondering if we could make this kind of into a board game. It won't have like a really broad audience, but it is kind of cool, and the fact that you can use Google Images means you can do it anywhere in the world. You don't have to just do it for the Arctic.
Excuse me a second. You say you are developing this into a board game, but what is it now?
Right now, you just download Google Images off of the web, and you can play the. And we have this basically a set of instructions. So you need a map with acetate over it, or you could, you know, if you're just going to do it once, you could just, and marker pens. But it's really, I'll show you some of the, I just excerpted a couple of the student responses, and it's just extraordinary what it gets across to people. Another one that's not shown here is a card game. So it's an Arctic ecosystem card game that basically has, you know, allows people requires that people build an ecosystem, and then they see a food web, and then they see what happens with climate change or with an oil spill. And it really, I'll show you some of the comments from that one as well. So does anybody have any comments? Well, actually, let me just go through the next couple of slides, and then I'll ask for comments about them. So Tamara asked about the spectrum. So here in the next slide, we have a range here from awareness to decisions. You know, going all the way from the Polar Explorer up to the gamification project. And if you, the next slide, it ranges from the classroom to the general public, and you can see here Arctic Smartic was based on the was originally a classroom activity, but we're trying to see how we can modify it for others as well. And then the next slide is ranging from low tech to high tech. So the card game Arctic Home is all the way at the one side. And then it goes on up through to, you know, paper and pencil, to community, like standing out in the field, to an online teacher education, to the social networking, and then finally to the iPad. So does anybody have questions about any of these activities?
Stephanie, I just have a comment. I don't know if you're actively doing this, but I know that there's a group at Turk that is involved in online games, and they have some funding that's integrating assessments around learning into these gaming kind of environments. And I was wondering if that's something that you're thinking about doing, or I could also put you in contact with them if that would be helpful.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to get in touch with them. We're doing some of these. We've run pilots, and I'll be showing you the comments in just a minute. But things like, you know, the gamification project that's called Greenify right now, but it won't be called that forever. That one, it's neat because it tracks things. Everything is tracked. But we're trying to figure out with some of the other things how we can track as well. So that I would really appreciate that connection.
Okay, sure.
Any other questions about them?
Can you say just a word or two about your selection of future coasts as a topic for that big game, as opposed to glaciers, for instance?
Yeah, so future coast, the idea was to try to get people kind of building on the sad stories of the tsunamis and Irene, to kind of link in with people from around the world. And as I said before, is to not come in with climate as the lead. So we thought that people, you know, are concerned about coastal development. They, you know, sea level rise is a polar, you know, origin issue, but that has global implications. All of these are kind of working titles. I don't know that any of them is going to stay. But could you tell me what was your concern?
Well, you had mentioned earlier, I live in the central part of the country.
Right.
And
okay.
You had mentioned the importance of glaciers
right.
in people's perceptions as well.
Right.
And glaciers as water sources
right.
is equally huge. And I was just wondering if you considered other options and how you landed on coast as opposed to some other topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Future Coast has a major component. We have two aspects of it. One is the boots on the ground part, which is, you know, along the coast. And then the other one is this other part of the campaign that is designed to reach people in the interior. So in imagining future worlds. So it is intended to be broader, but yeah, each of our titles, I think, basically, you know, we haven't gone like to marketing for them yet.
Uh-huh.
And you're right that somebody in the interior might not necessarily get excited about Future Coast if they're not on a coast, right? So
I think that's right. But I'm glad to hear that you're thinking of it from both perspectives. Most of the population does live within 50 miles of the coast.
Right.
So I think that will reach your larger population audience, but I think it's well taken to look from different points of view for the interior as well.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so then moving on. So just some of our initial responses. So the card game, we asked people, you know, what they learned from it, and this is just a couple. Most people said something along these lines. You know, they had a sense of how, you know, what the species are and what they have to eat, but then they also learn how vulnerable it is, that, you know, if you take out like the polar cod or the ice algae or something like that, then the rest of the ecosystem is impacted. It really got that point across. And we asked them how they felt about the game as they were playing it. And so it was interesting. So they were all, it tapped into the sense of empathy. So at first they have to create this food web, and they get really, and they trade cards to build it, and they get really excited, you know, and they're like building this incredible web and stuff, and then they get the crisis cards, and they lose part of it. So, but you can see, you know, one of the comments was they get competitive, you know, because they're building like a better web than somebody else and stuff, and then they get excited about it. They get, they feel a sense of urgency when they realize this, because they know that the sea ice is melting. I mean, this is something that most people are aware of, and so they immediately say, oh no, this means that, you know, this sort of thing is going to happen for real. And they're engaged in it, and they think that it's cool, you know, it's a fun thing to actually play. One of the things that what we were told early on by our colleagues at Teachers College who are involved with these kinds of games is they said, you know, it's easy to do something in a classroom setting because both teachers and students tend to be so bored. Well, not teachers, but so the bar for something being fun is set much lower. But if you want something to actually take off and work with the general public, you know, it has to be, you know, the bar for it being fun for repeat play has to be much higher. And so that's one of our challenges right now is, you know, to make some of these, and this has potential for repeat play. Smartic, so is the other one where we have, I'm presenting you with some of the responses. So the first time we ran this is within a class called Responding to Climate Change. It was undergraduate students who were upper level, and they really got, you know, they learned about the awareness of all the different factors. They thought, had to think about the short and the long run. They prioritized where action and management practices had to occur first, so they saw where the hot spots were. And then one of the things that they really thought, they came away empowered. They really had a sense of sort of hope and agency that you could tackle some of these problems, that not all of the stakeholders were in conflict. Many of them had congruent interests, and it's not everywhere in the Arctic where you have, you know, really this, you know, contested concerns. So they really took away a sense of sort of hope coming out of this. When we asked them at the end of the class, you know, what of the strategies that they learned would they, you know, most likely use if they actually had to respond to climate change, this one was rated the highest. The little bar chart at the top, they said, you know, 89% of them said definitely, and only one of them said maybe. I should say that we only had 9 students in the class, so it wasn't a huge sample. But we ran it with 42 graduate students afterwards who are in the Masters in Climate Society program at Columbia, and they also had similar comments. The overall, now, in terms of games, we taught this class Responding to Climate Change almost entirely through using games. And so we were wondering, you know, we only had a 2 hour, it was an hour and 50-minute slot instead of 2 hour and 15-minute slots. And we were wondering, you know, how what the students took away from this. And if you can see here, and I'll just skip over this a little bit, but I mean, I won't go through the whole thing, but they basically thought that they learned more from engaging in games than in a standard lecture class. And they definitely disagreed that they did not, except for one student, they didn't want to have more lectures and fewer activities. And this made them feel empowered to respond to climate change. So where we are now is we've, you know, developed these ideas in concert, you know, working with stakeholders and some of our, you know, our potential audience members, and also talking with dissemination partners, and we're kind of iterating, going back and forth among the different ones to try to, you know, figure out ways to sort of leverage existing resources, but then also to maximize impact. So just to conclude, I've got 2 final slides. So basically, we're using, you know, the fascination with polar regions and these novel educational approaches to engage the adult learners. We want to deepen awareness and understanding of and inform responses to climate change. We want to sort of engage people thinking of this as a challenge. And we want to catalyze new ways of learning about climate change. And these approaches that we're developing are, you know, are easy to disseminate and hopefully exciting to use. I mean, our surveys or pilot studies have shown that the stakeholders really like them. So I'd like to just, you know, close with asking you for your idea, you know, responses, but then also if you have ideas, you know, have you had experience actually working with games as a communication tool or game-like approaches? And then also, if you have ideas about businesses or managers or other venues for dissemination, because those are the things that we're lining. We've got some in right now, but we're trying to line up some more.
This is Martha Shaw from Earth Advertising, and we do some games having to do with, you know, it seems like we're aligned with some of the things you do, and I have to get off the phone, but I would like to have your contact information or have you email it.
Right. So it's pretty easy. It's just S. Furman, you know, you saw S-P-F-I-R-M-A-N at Barnard, B-A-R-N-A-R-D dot E-D-U.
Thank you so much for such a wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are there any other questions for Stephanie?
Can you tell us if these are available for use at this point?
So some of them are. The Smartick is, as I said, it's just basically a set of instructions, and that is on the CAML website that's being launched next week. It the whole lesson plan is there, and I've been telling Mark and Tamara forever that I was going to send it to them, but we were just tweaking it. So I can get that to the clean group to you guys as well. The other ones are in other stages of development. The AMNH class has actually ran this fall. So that one, if you know of teachers who are interested in taking it, they can do that.
Thank you.
Yep.
Do you have a website where all of these things are identified that people could find? Or
yeah, so we're, you know, because we're in the proposal phase right now for phase two, we haven't, you guys are getting more of a sneak peek than most people are. So we actually don't have a lot of things listed right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question, this is Jeff Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, given the CSIP I'm involved with, I'm very interested in your Futures Coasts game. And I guess I'm curious as to how granular those are going to be, because there's the sort of generic coastal stuff, and what we've discovered working in Florida is that when you start looking at higher resolution data, the picture changes really dramatically, and that can affect how people will respond to it.
Right. So the way we've run it in our pilots is we actually had CSIN. I don't know if you're aware. What is it? Center for International Earth Science Information Network or something, and they have very high resolution population and sea level rise, and so they generated specific maps for us. And we'll probably wind up, you know, in the developmental phases, is to generate something much, much higher resolution for people. What we've been using kind of as a proxy is Flood Fire Tree, which is reasonable, actually. I don't know if you've checked that out, but...
No.
Yeah, just you could Google Flood Fire Tree, and it'll come up immediately, and it's okay. I mean, I did it for the tsunami, and it was pretty close to what actually, you know, but that was a more simple coastline, maybe.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you've had contact with these folks, and since you mentioned using some of the Google information, the Google Earth information, have you interfaced at all with Declan DePere or Steve Whitmire, the sort of partners in crime on a lot of the Google Earth visualization stuff that DOE is supporting right now?
No, I haven't. We have somebody at CSIN who's been our main liaison with Google Earth for us. But let me get those names, because we have some other things that we wanted to... Who was it?
Yeah. Well, Declan DePere. He's Irish. Okay. D-E-C-L-A-N.
Okay.
D-E, capital P-A-O-R.
Okay.
He's at Old Dominion. And Steve Whitmire. W-H-I-T-M-E-Y-E-R.
Right.
And he's at James Madison.
Okay.
And they've been funded pretty extensively now by both GOED and by the TWS program to develop various kinds of Google Earth tools and visualizations. And so there might be a real nice synergy there for you.
That That's great. Yeah, because we just came up with this neat new idea, and we were wondering how to implement it.
They've got dollars to be doing that kind of stuff, and they're looking, you know, they're at that stage where they're trying to expand projects and looking for people to play with.
Great. Oh, that's a great lead. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, and we should definitely connect, you know, for phase two, like writing letters of support for each other or something.
Yeah, well, I think there's some really nice. I think we've got stuff. I think we're going to have content you're going to want.
Right.
And I think there's some stuff that you're going to do in terms of gaming that will be real valuable to us.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Also, Stephanie, and I know that Jeff already knows about this, but we are in the Clean Pathway Project. We've put in place a rigorous review process for resources, and one area we've not addressed yet but would like to is informal education avenues and games. And so I would like to also talk to you a little bit about potentially partnering with providing services from Clean to your Phase 2. And for anybody else who's on the phone who's planning to do a Phase 2, we'd like to offer those kinds of services. Right now we're planning on doing one of these webinars on January 31st to give an overview of what those services could potentially be. And then I'd like to talk to the CSEP Phase 1s individually about their specific needs and anybody else who would like to, who is planning on proposing to Phase 2 about their specific needs also, because I think that we have a very robust process now. It allows us to put resources in a collection that is make it available to a wider range of people, as well as to identify those that are most useful to you and make those available through your own website. So
yeah.
I just wanted to, and Jeff has been part of our review process, so he kind of knows that a little bit more extensively. But Stephanie, I wanted to let you know about that,
yeah.
And we should talk further about that.
Yeah, we should. That sounds great. Yeah, I think, Stephanie, I mean, what we're looking for in Phase 2 is for people to connect with each other. So,
right.
You know, I think it definitely makes all of our, you know, projects stronger if we can if we can connect in these ways.
Are there any other questions?
Stephanie, one of the things in informal education that people struggle with is one-shot interactions with people versus additional interactions with the same audiences. Have you given that any thought in terms of the materials that you're developing?
Yeah, we have. So the gamification one was nice along those lines because it locks people in to something for an extended period of time. Most people who engage, or not most people, but a substantial number of people who engage in something like this, they stay connected with it for a while. So that's one that where you can get this repeat experience. The Future Coast, we were actually thinking of trying to run that maybe two or even three times because we think it might build momentum if you do it, you know, as an episode, but over several years. Those were the two main ones where we were trying to do that. Not everything you're going to be able to, you know, achieve that with,
mm-hmm.
but we are trying to build that into at least some of our projects.
Thanks.
And we don't see this, you know, this isn't going to, nothing that any one of us does is going to solve all the problems, right?
Right.
But we just see this as a really interesting piece of the, you know, of the sort
the
of the toolkit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Great. Are there any other questions? Okay. Well, then, Stephanie, thanks very much for a fascinating presentation.
Yeah.
We look forward to hearing more about it in the future, and I think a lot of us will be talking to you also pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and thanks so much for the opportunity to talk with all of you about it.
And can you say your email address one more time?
Yeah, it's S and then PF, like Peter Frank, SPFIRMAN at barnard.edu.
Thanks.
And this is Scott, I put that up on our webpage too.
Oh, great, thank you.
It's on the telecon schedule page.
Okay, and so everybody knows we will be posting the recording along with the slides, so anybody who's missed it will be able to listen to Stephanie's presentation later. All right,
thank you
thanks so everybody.
Thanks.
Thanks so much,
bye.
Stephanie.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm out.